Looking to upgrade your bathroom without the hassle or the wait? Say hello to Blissful Baths, the stress-free way to transform your space into a relaxing retreat. Right now, Blissful Baths is offering 12 months with no payments and no interest. That's right, zero payments and zero interest for a whole year. Even better, they can replace your walk-in shower or bath in as little as one day. No mess, no long waits. Just a beautiful new bath space, fast. And here's the cherry on top. You can get up to 20% off with instant manufacturer rebates, plus extra savings for seniors and first responders. Ready to turn your bathroom into your own personal spa? Go to blissfulbaths.com today to request your free consultation. That's blissfulbaths.com. You deserve affordable luxury.
In truth, while I've heard of the Jersey Devil as an urban legend, I never figured it to be much more than a flicker out of the corner of someone's eye, or a branch snapping in the woods. While I was always aware that this job would show me things I would not be ready to comprehend, I always thought that the presence of trolls and ogres would be most extreme. Then I started looking into the Jersey Devil. For those who have either started reading these case files now, or have asked for this particular cryptid to be archived, I will go over a brief rundown of this particular cryptid. The Jersey Devil is typically noted to be seen around southern New Jersey, hence the name. It is a small creature, about 3 or 4 feet tall, goat-shaped head, hooves, and small forearms and leathery wings. One of the most reported features is its inhuman shrieking noise. It is also reported to be very fast. While there have been no confirmed deaths caused by this cryptid, observations by agents of the morticians noted that the area that is said to be the domain of this cryptid is given a very wide berth by other cryptids. I do not blame them. I would rather get into a fight with an ogre than encounter this thing again. There were reports of animal corpses that suffered wounds not usually associated with any fatal injuries. Since there was no verified witnesses of this attack, it was assumed to be inflicted by a naturally occurring creature. Having seen monsters that could and would kill me should they choose to, this seemed a harmless investigation to go through. I packed for a night hike, as I wasn't planning on staying in its territory too long. The drive to the area was long. On arrival, I checked in at my motel and started on my hike. I had several days' worth of food and had some research on local non-poisonous and non-toxic flora in the area. It was careful work getting to the beaten track, and I found a meager area to set up as a camp. As I set my pack down, I felt a presence. It was enormous, like an extra weight trying to smother me. Whatever is capable of exuding this level of intensity was not a weak creature. Spinning around, I saw it, standing in the open and grinning at me. 3.5 feet tall, light brown fur. It held its belly and laughed. Well, that was the sensation it seems to be emulating, but the sheer volume was like Barry White chuckling like Santa Claus, and it had a level of menace that not even the ogre exhibited. It raced past me and was gone by the time I turned around. I stood there, shaking. It wasn't adrenaline, exactly. It was fear. It is very rare for sociopaths to actually experience a strong enough emotion to generate an honest response. Fear was a common aspect when one did a combat tour, but that was muted. But compared to the sheer dread I felt when this cryptid laughed at me, it was like comparing the alcohol content of a light beer and absinthe. Soon, the fear subdued, and I felt the obligation to stay out for one night. It was fast, and it had a laugh that I will always dread hearing again. But there wasn't much else I knew about it. I set up my tent, prepped a campfire, and waited for a while. As I watched, it appeared in my little camp area, its menacing grin still on its face. Then I felt the pressure. I have rarely had the displeasure of enduring a migraine, but this pressure within my skull was brutal. It just stared into me. Its focus was on my mind, and I could actually feel images form in my mind. It was disjointed, like a cutscene in a horror video game trying to be scary. Flashes of images, strobe-like effects of the images, and screaming. It took me quite a while, but I realized it was telling me something about what it actually is. The first image was to think of a bar log, except double its height, remove the fire from it, and the wings are made of demon flesh, perpetually dripping blood. The arms look spikier. At seemingly random points along its arms are shards of bone that jut out. Its smile in this form is the most predatory, bloodlustful smile possible across the known cryptids. Then I saw a Bible, and the image shatters into dozens of pieces. Then, in each shard, the Bible is positioned to be in the center of each one by reflection. The two images flickered back and forth, but I thought I got the meaning, because of the fragmented religious form on that holy book. The Jersey Devil cannot assume its proper form. The thing nodded. The migraine eased up considerably. Then more images appeared. This time it is of the Jersey Devil, as it is described by others, but its shadow is that of its proper form. It walked through a firefight, bullets not affecting it. Rockets, machine guns, tank shells, throwing daggers, swords, axes, nothing affected it. As I considered a church, it laughed again, and I saw it standing behind a pulpit, apparently giving a sermon. It would grab the bowl of holy water and splash itself in the face while smiling. When I thought of the word angel, the shattered Bible image appeared, and I immediately got the meaning. Fragmented religion, diminished beings of power. The migraine was almost gone, but it felt like there was a blur wedged into my skull. The mini-devil walked off and returned, dragging a large buck behind it with an almost contemptuous ease. It dropped it at my feet and pointed at it and me, twice. This was easy to figure out, so I started to prepare some meat. By the time I had finished, it returned, dragging a dead Wendigo. It was one of the most tense meals I've ever been in. I cooked my venison, it ate the Wendigo meat raw, and stared at me the entire time. I glanced at the face of its meal, and I'm certain it looked horrified right before it died. After I had my fill, it pointed at me, and then the direction of the motel. I started to pack up, and it growled. You know how people with the bass in their cars can make long hair go nuts, or make people throw up due to the intensity of the vibration? This was like the exact opposite of that. It was like my bones tried to push my muscles away with spikes for a second. I started to leave and glanced back. I saw its last image. At first, it was someone cooking meats over a fire, but instead of me cooking the venison, it was cooking me. I ran out of the woods and sat in my room for the additional 2 nights. The only thing of observable note is that other devil hunters heard a yipping in the woods. I heard that laughter. One of the few people who I actually got along with died a mysterious death. The death occurred about 7 years ago, and the one thing that seemed out of the ordinary was that her movements around any form or drainage with her house that I was able to observe seemed like there was a very slight outside influence. It would be like there was an invisible bubble that brushed her hands to the side. As unusual as it was, it never really stood out to me, until I read her death report. As it turned out, she was the 37th victim of a series of deaths caused by an unknown being. Case file. Drained. Civilian. Number 035. Deceased woman, identified as Jennifer Mills, was found inside her apartment, due to lack of attendance at her job as a sales representative for a large hardware company. 4 days without communication and calls from family and work colleagues, the police gained entry with access granted by the building supervisor. The skin was found on the bathroom floor. The supervisor was horrified by the remains of her body. During the investigation, a small journal was found, documenting the last 5 weeks of her life, which was the same time as when she moved in. References to a therapist allowed the police to find out more about the deceased. Interviews with the therapist indicate that the victim was a victim of a subset of trypophobia. Instead of irregular holes, it was drainage pipes, specifically regarding house plumbing. She could feel something was trying to reach her through the plumbing. She would have nightmares about the pipes acting like a snake, slithering across her bedroom floor, but when she woke up, nothing would be different. After 8 months of conversation regarding this, in which she is adamant that she sees a singular eye looking up at her through the drainage cover, oddly, the shower wasn't a problem for her. The doctor recommended that the deceased use a journal to document her feelings, and they would go over it at their weekly sessions together. One thing that was noted was that the fear was only when the deceased was conscious of her proximity to a drain in her home. Since this was a problem that had occurred at her old residence, a move was suggested, in case it was an odd sensation of domicile dissonance. After the move, the sensation seemed to escalate in intensity. For reasons currently unknown, the deceased was not afraid of approaching these drainage areas and would be functional until they see the drain. Then the fear kicks in. It is highly unusual among phobia sufferers. The doctor paled at hearing the description of the state of her body. She mentioned she knew of one other therapist who had a near identical patient in terms of specific phobia subset and state of body after recovery by police. Details were exchanged, and the police resumed their investigation. The initial paperwork triggered automated spy bots within various networks, caught the expression, hollowed out. The morticians took custody over the investigation. The morticians were able to uncover details that they didn't want the police to disseminate. Every case so far, the skin of the person was found within arm's reach of a drain, normally near the bathroom sink. A singular circular wound, similar to the holes in the drain on a finger, is the only visible indicator of what has happened. No signs of skeletal, nerves, pulmonary, or circulatory systems could be located. Fatty tissue is also missing as well as the musculature. The obvious action is to check the plumbing. The drain cover is there, but there are no pipes at all. Kitchen, laundry, toilets, and bathroom. All of the plumbing would be gone. Upon further inquiry, the owner of the building or water board company would note that the water for the location has been turned off, and that there is no account that was open for the name of the deceased. The drain cover had no organic matter to indicate the presence of the body matter. Pets would never be affected, and they would sit by the main entry points and would repeatedly vocalize their discomfort until their death or rescue. Journal entry. It can see me. It knows me. Why can't it stop watching me when I am in the bathroom? I can almost see it, but part of me is so terrified of the drain. It isn't until I see it, my brain screams at me to run and to not look back. When I glance away, the fear is gone, like a switch being turned off. At least the dreams have stopped. I just want to know why I keep looking towards the bathroom, and if I was waiting for someone I hadn't seen in a long time to appear there out of nowhere. I hate this.
Case file finished.
There is little information that the morticians have, but all the case files read almost identically. Very few details change. The location of where the body is found, the location of the primary fear source, is always where the deceased skin would end up. The complete lack of drain piping, lack of water usage for the location, the earliest recorded instance was 22 years ago, with all of the noted cases occurring within the United States. The assorted victims seemed to be at random. No connections could be found, even with new data located upon additional victims. This would be cause for concern, but given the hundreds of case files I am still going through, indicates that there are likely to be other events as well. I had a visitor the other day. when I was taking the initial plunge past the dark web and going into the depths of the deep web, I observed an administrator for a red room who was intrigued by my fleeting visit to his site. He and some friends located me by tracking the unique data signature of the custom program I was using. They bragged about killing my friend who gave me the program. It was interesting seeing them try to intimidate me. Their smiles hidden behind masks showed me that they still suffered from an emotional range. The fight was swift, and the muscle brought along were dead at my feet. The brain was incapacitated and secured in the chair I was in previously. We had a conversation about his desire to kill me and the lengths he took. He was defiant to the end. Not that it mattered. He mentioned that he told other admins that he was tracking the one that got away, but gave no further details. I opened his veins and watched off-screen as he slowly bled to death. He wanted a show for his red room, a reminder of how he was a god with the power to judge the unworthy, and he had the power to decide when a life would end. He, apparently, was wrong. I smashed the camera after he died. I contacted the morticians, and they took care of the fools. There was an encounter I had not so long after getting rid of the lurkers of the dark web and his cohorts. However, it took me several days to fully comprehend the event and to stop screaming at night. It was about 3 days after the cleanup was finished, and when there were no missing person flags matching the descriptions of the deceased, I was asked to look into a hypothetical cryptid. It didn't sound as much a request, but payment for services rendered. When I asked for any information regarding this hypothesis, the only thing known was the name. Leviathan. The resources of the Mortician Network apparently does have some limits. While they didn't have a submersible on hand, they were owed favors by people of influence. Not exact resources, but close enough for most to consider them as such. However, this favor the morticians would be calling on was the investigation of this cryptid. A retired naval officer from a country I have been asked to not identify has reported an awareness of a monster that dwelled below the waves. Official naval protocol worldwide was to squash any reports of information regarding this cryptid, but the officer suffered from what he dubbed narcophobia. He couldn't sleep as a conscious act because he would see it again. Given the sleeping pattern he endures, the credibility of any reliable information is of the most suspect quality, but subsequent investigations found that there were others who also suffered from narcophobia who also were in their naval equivalents, and all were part of a submarine crew. This particular eccentric witness managed to retain coherency and had become obsessed with identifying this creature. Using his knowledge and engineering skills, he crafted a small submersible that barely registered on sonar, but he needed a witness who was fresh to identify his visions. I was elected to be the witness to a madman's quest for answers. So I met the man who looked to be redefining the expression sleep-deprived, and he led me to his submersible. As I was not involved with submarines or anything nautical while in the army, I couldn't give a good approximation on the size of the vehicle. He showed me how it works in ramblings I had to endure multiple times to comprehend. Checklists were followed, food and water rations were verified, the fuel reservations were confirmed to be accurate, and we dove underwater. It took us 2 days to get to the area. I heard the same tale told over and over again for the first 14 hours. Human corpses found with giant bite marks and no matchable mouth castings to identify the creature. Shutting the man up permanently was something I considered frequently, until he turns to me with a big smile and his declaration of how he was going to bed now, and promptly fell asleep. Our location was under the giant plastic island in the Pacific Ocean. I can't relay the latitude and longitude because I could never figure out how the thing was calculated. And for another reason you will discover shortly. I napped as well for a few hours, Upon waking up, I went to the cockpit and looked around. The retired naval officer was looking down with a grimace. One of the spotlights was locked onto a patch of coral. "Can you see it?" he asked softly. I looked at the location bathed in light for a couple of moments. Then I realized there was something hiding on top of it. Have you ever seen those photos of the man who hides in plain sight by painting himself to look like the background? This is what it was like. Like the camouflage capabilities of the chameleon or some other creatures in the animal kingdom. It was huge, at least 80 feet in length. I had no idea how quick until a large shark got a little too close. Within a blink, and I am being literal, it went from hiding to devouring the shark like the creature Gollum with a life fish in the Lord of the Rings movies. Except Gollum wasn't a dark brown color with three arms, one reaching over from behind, and the growl this thing emanated while eating shook the submersible. It was happy with the snack. The arm looked like it had been broken and allowed to fix suboptimally, causing bone warping. It had four legs, and they moved like a spider with half its legs, but better balance.
"That's it. Leviathan,"
he whispered happily. Then I looked up and wished I had met a fully formed Jersey Devil. The recollections were after the fact, but one of the first things I knew was that I was screaming for almost 20 minutes, without pausing for breath. I had no idea until I was being shaken back to reality. I noticed my throat and face were sore. Apparently, I had been screaming. He had tried slapping me in the face a few times to get me to stop, but to no avail. While he asked what was wrong, I just pointed to the apparition above us. It was gargantuan. It was like a mass of flesh from which tendrils dropped and spread out. At the edge were things. Monsters that defied all natural logic, but they kept shifting their forms, like the mass to which they were connected.
"What are you looking at?"
Words that seemed to resonate within me. I turned to face the man, but that was when I noticed that there was a face in front of the submersible. The flesh seemed to crawl, and the eyes didn't seem empty, just hungry. My mind started to scream, and I just stood there, frozen. From the files I had read, and things I had seen, there is an acceptance of fate. People who seem to know when it is their time. This thing triggered an oxymoronic sense within me. This thing was not from this world, but it belongs here. What felt like an ice pick getting slammed into my brain caused a blindingly painful migraine. When I went to move any part of my face, another ice pick of pain was slammed into me. The only thing I could move without an almost debilitating level of agony was my eyes. I was forced to stare into this creature's face, which seems to be made of creatures that should never exist in our world.
"What are you looking at?"
the voice asked again. And I just stared at the thing's face as it seemed to implode and withdraw back to the rest of its mass, hidden beneath the plastic convergence in the Pacific.
"I think we should leave,"
came a voice that was actually familiar. The last thing I remember was trying to figure out what that thing sounded like, and me convulsing. I had always thought being soulless would be the greatest protection against cryptids and the like. The Jersey Devil showed me that some cryptids don't care. The Leviathan showed me that there was far more to this world than I dared to dream. I think I know why most cryptids that have to do with the ocean are quasi-humanoid. They cannot fully comprehend the thing which apparently triggered a Grand Mal seizure within me. I was in observation for 6 days, mainly due to the night terrors. It stared at me when I closed my eyes, and the concerning thing is, it is getting closer whenever I sleep. It turns out that the morticians have been neglecting a section of their case files from me. While I have archived some of the more known cryptids, I wasn't even aware of the subcategory until I was summoned by an incident scene. In a large field, there was one of those dopey crop circles, but the actual scene was on the edge of a neighboring forest area. I saw a young female dead, and scorched by a weapon or energy that I couldn't readily identify. And I saw an 8-foot-tall, black-skinned humanoid with a head that was larger than a normal person. Given the color of the skin and the dwindling ambient light, it was not readily apparent why this entity was there as well. Only complete lack of movement indicated that it was dead also. When it rolled over, I saw that the nose was almost non-existent, and the teeth looked more like fangs. The eye sockets appeared to be a bit larger than the victim's. Looking at this new corpse, I turned to the attending active mortician. She looked at me and sighed deeply. She pulled out a large folder. Using the light from my cell phone, I saw the case file name.
Alien event. Number 0001. Civilian.
I looked at the mortician, and before I could ask the obvious question, she told me the worrying answer.
813, including this incident.
The file in my hands was quite thick, thicker than the others I had looked at in the past when I got my hands on the physical file. I offered to help the mortician with this incident, then I would document both. She acquiesced, and she gave me the instructions, UV lamps, and 2 gurneys. I grabbed the light stands and carried them out, positioning them in the places indicated. When they were turned on, the alien corpse glowed softly, and the injuries inflicted upon the human corpse glowed as well.
"Map out the crop circle,"
came an instruction I was not expecting.
"I will need exact measurements of any circles. The area would be good, too. Also, total length of the whole thing as well."
I paused for a moment and nodded. I had always figured out that the crop circles were bored teenagers or farmers, which, when you think about it, makes absolutely no sense. Not that they can't be man-made, but the reason for it. What would increased visitors to a farm do in terms of sale or production? I found a headlamp and a measuring tape with a spike on the end, as well as a notebook. I set about my task. It was simple, but several times I stopped. I was being watched. Something was observing me with an intent I could not identify. Looking around, I saw nothing the first 3 times, but while measuring the largest circle, I both heard and saw it. Another 8-foot, black-skinned humanoid was standing in the cornfield with me. It had partially stepped out of the corn and was partially inside the circle. Its slightly bulbous eyes had no discernible pupil. Its chest moved deeply with its breathing. We stared at each other for about 40 seconds, then it walked away. I resumed my measurements, noting them all down. 8 circles in total. 3 were quite large. While I reported the measurements to the mortician, she nodded along as I read it out loud. But she froze after I finished. I immediately looked to see if the other one was back, but there was no sign of it. When I inquired as to her freezing, she explained that there is an arrangement between their organization and the black ones. She then immediately refused to elaborate further. We loaded the bodies in and drove to a compound. I mentioned that I saw one of the black ones while measuring. Her glance seemed to be concerned. Then I had a flash of insight. "You autopsy their experiments, and that was all you ever did. But with the corpse of one of them along with the experiments indicates that there is greater trouble than we're aware of, right? Things have changed. And you're unsure of how..." I trailed off. "How quickly can you conduct an autopsy on the black one?" I asked,
my gaze peering into the side and rearview mirror. A couple of hours. Know anything about them biologically? Weakness, capabilities, things that might be useful, just in case? Only what is reported in the first case. It is a long read. So, after I wheeled the bodies to the mortuary, I read the case file.
Case file. Serial killer. Eyeless. Related topics. Black. Xenos.
It is not often that we directly interfere with the lives of the regular populace. But this was one time where we were forced to act. What is not known is that before Jack the Ripper, there was another active serial killer. However, we made sure nobody knew about him. Eyeless, as he would refer to himself, was the only known surviving member of the Xeno experiments. However, since they failed to deliver his corpse, he went completely insane and started to kill people at random. The first victim was a 28-year-old dock worker, Jeremiah Langston. Little was recorded about the abduction of Jeremiah, but the only indication of anything unusual was a deranged scream about how he must be made to see. Jeremiah's body was found with an extra set of eyes inserted into wounds on his corpse. The one thing that would normally set the rumor mill ablaze was the fact that the eyes were still functional. The only other oddity, which was significantly more mundane, was that the skin was rubbed with charcoal, making it completely black. One of the attending policemen was a mortician who paled at the sight, because he didn't see the corpse as human, but as a black Xeno. He offered to escort the corpse to the morgue. Fortunately, the mortician on duty was also one of the morticians as well. They realized the problem, and they needed to do something obscene to divert any mounting public perception of the events. They knew that a killer who was putting eyes onto corpses was unlikely to stop at one, but they couldn't allow this to continue. So, the mortician who found the corpse elected to do a twofold operation. Search for the killer they sought was the obvious one, but they had to divert attention away from this as well. Many are familiar with the Jack the Ripper case. Some of you reading this may also be Ripperologists. So instead of rehashing the case, I will point out that the actual murderer was a mortician who used his police officer skills to create the sensational kills and to get any information about the killer he truly sought. 3 weeks. That is how long it took to find the killer the morticians sought. Did it never strike you as strange as to why the murder of prostitutes made the headlines in Victorian London? However, the killer himself was unusual. His skin was artificially black, like his victims, but he lacked the extraneous eyes his victims had. He had the right holes for the extras, but they were empty. He turns to the mortician, and he froze. They conversed for a few hours. It turns out that the black Xenos will take a human test subject and try to figure out how to get past the death problem. The Xenos would inflict countless experiments on the subject and record everything to do with the many limitations of the human body. But this man was another experiment. He was given a serum that modified his body chemistry to a point that the modern term for it is zombie. His brain function has severely limited, but judging by the bruises still evident on his skin, he had been struck by lightning, and it seems to have awakened the higher functions that had been deactivated. The zombie remembered every hellish experiment he was subjected to, and then after they neutered most of the higher functionality, was sent back to Earth. It is hypothesized that a lightning strike triggered a chemical reaction that allowed the brain to recover memories of the experiments that the zombie went through. 5 people were killed by this zombie. 5 bodies with eyes that were not connected to any ocular nerves, but still able to move. The zombie explained how he suffered repeated traumas to understand the limits of the human physiology. He was then healed afterwards, and his memories were wiped. Then the process would repeat. After the lightning strike, he would have flashes of memory involving tall, black humanoids with large eyes watching him as he would suffer significant biological trauma. This caused him to freak out and start finding his tormentors and, in the zombies' words, make them see. After reading the case file, I looked over at the mortician. "So, you know where the mushed corpses come from, then?" I asked as I walked over to her. She shot me a questioning look. "Repeated significant biological trauma, like injuring someone over and over again, or killing them over and over again." I glared at her before I continued. "Did you ever wonder what their true intentions were? Just because they say one thing doesn't mean they don't mean something else. For all we know, they treat their guinea pigs as science shows, like they did when they performed surgeries for the rich and elite, or they use them as props in a science fair, or they're trying to figure out the most effective ways to kill us, when there are plenty of things that can easily kill us on this planet already, before we can venture into cryptid territory." I ended with a snarl.
"Or they are trying to remove death from us. Slaves that are weak, as humans are, would be a huge waste of time, unless they couldn't stay dead."
"Maybe their intentions are honest. If so, why the mush corpses? Someone is trying to send us a message, and you people are too thick to even notice that this is what's going on. It could be a test.